Got it.
Welcome, everybody, to Cycle Jerks Podcast, episode 108. I'm Mike Stewart, your host, joined today with co-host Dave Dalton. And we've got two local riders that just completed the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder, David Seton and Frank Gregorina.
You got it.
I did it. Yep. All right. Welcome, guys.
Awesome. Great Thanks. To be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great
hey, guys.
Good morning.
So, to all the listeners, if I sound a little biased, I've been riding with these guys for years, so they're friends. And so if I don't sound objective, two fucking passions.
Jeez, that didn't take long, Dave.
No, all right. No, world record.
Yep. Dave's king of the F-bombs. Yep. Well, guys, I've never done it. I've definitely looked at it and thought, man, that seems like a really fun thing to go do, especially with a friend. This was your first time doing it?
Can we go back? Because these guys, Frank's got a pretty interesting journey into cycling. So let's get a little background if we could, because I mean, Frank, you really haven't been at it that long, right? You were telling me the other day on a ride back how, you know, just not too long ago, you were trying to get onto the bakery ride. And, you know, and I know, David, you've been doing it for a while on every form of bike, right? Tandem bikes, single speed. So just tell us a little bit about yourself. We know it, but the listeners may not. So,
yeah, Frank, go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, sure. So local guy, live here in San Ramon. Started out biking, really doing triathlons, and started out with some short distance ones, ended up doing the full Ironman. But as you know, that's not really conducive to like group riding. It's you're out there by yourself when you're doing those triathlons. There's no drafting. And so did that, but then you're, you know, doing the other sports as well, running and swimming, so really mixing it up. But it wasn't until 2016 that I actually started getting, I'd say, more serious into the road riding, and then later with gravel riding. But what I was telling Dave the other day was, I started out, I think it was about 2016, and joined in the local group rides here in East Bay, and there's one on Wednesday mornings that leaves Danville called the Bakery, heads up to Sunol and out to Livermore and loops back. And I joined that one, and the first time I think I got dropped within the first 5 miles by the group. Yeah. The next time I went out, I actually started talking with Dave, and he encouraged me. He said, "Hey, don't worry about it. We were all new. Just keep sticking with it. You'll get a little bit longer," and then kind of explain how the dynamics of the group worked and, you know, the surge points and stuff like that. And that was it. Like, you know, really caught my interest. And each week I'd try and get a little bit further until I was finally able to do the entire group ride. And then found out about the other local group rides. Dave was doing the 615 rides then, eventually ended up joining the Splunk race team and doing some road races, which then got me into the gravel and kind of where I'm at here today. So I was telling Dave, big kudos to him. And, you know, it can be intimidating if when you get into these groups and you've got riders, you know, whether they're serious riders or just good recreational riders, it's definitely intimidating. But to have people like Dave and others along the way that were willing to help out and teach me things and encourage me to stay in there and not say, "Hey, this is just over my head." Can't say enough about that. So that's kind of how I started and how I got into it and then got into the gravel. And I just love the gravel. I know we're going to talk about it, but just the community feeling and the adventure of gravel riding.
Yeah. You know, it is really most people that have, you know, done a group ride for the first time, you know, everybody gets dropped. And when you finally do make it to the end, even mm-hmm. though it's just a group ride, there's a sense of like, real accomplishment there. You know, I remember when I was as a kid, I grew up racing BMX, and they had the cyclotron lab rides, and I just started riding road bikes, and everybody's like, "Oh, you got to go do the tron ride and I just got smoked, you know. And then it, you know, I think it was like four or five rides, and then I finally did the entire ride, you know. And then, you know, fast forward a couple months later, and then you're actually, you know, involved in
right.
all cool. the elements of the ride, you know, and Yeah. So there's a huge sense of accomplishment. Yeah. So I could totally relate to that. I think most cyclists can. How about you, David? What got you going?
Well, I've been on a bike since I was a kid, probably just like you, riding my BMX bike, never formally racing or anything. And then in 2016, right about the same time, I guess Frank started getting into it. I was working as a consultant, so I had a little bit of extra time and started getting on my bike. And I remember my first group ride, I was on a Wednesday, I think, or a Friday ride. These group of guys in Oakland would meet at the Rock Ridge BART station. So I took BART out there, and I was, I think, about 35-ish or something like that. And these guys were in their 60s. And I'm like, well, maybe I can keep up. I probably can keep up, right? Yeah. And hit tunnel road, and I was out the back, like an anchor tied to me. And then, you know, similar story, just kept going back and working hard. And they introduced me to the hop ride. And then I was actually, you know, I was living in Piedmont or near Piedmont at the time. So, and that's actually what brought me to Danville, was the hop ride, why I wanted to live in Danville versus San Ramon or Pleasanton or.
Oh, boy.
Here. That's dedication right there. I got to move to Danville for the hop.
So yeah, and now I can barely hang on. No, so the same story, right? Just kept getting dropped and kept working at it. And I remember first time, like, I took a pull, it was like the biggest smile on my face. Someone said, like, great pull or something like that, and I was like, you know, I accomplished something.
You're like, yes, so- it was. I'm dead now. Yeah.
So well, yeah.
Sorry to cut you off, but thanks, Dave, for setting me straight. I was so excited to talk about this Oregon Trail Gravel Grinders that I just jumped right in. And Dave's right. I mean, we usually like to find the backstory, how you got here. And so, Dave, thanks for setting us.
I just wanted Frank to give me a shameless plug about how helpful I was. That's all. Oh, yeah. Really important. Yeah. Thing.
Just fishing. Yep.
So now we got to make this transition. So we've all done it, right? From road to gravel. And I don't even know. I think for me, it started out more cyclocross because Dan was my mechanic was Dan Hepner, was all into cyclocross. I didn't know anything about it. And so I started doing that. But then how do you really practice for cyclocross? So I just started riding my cyclocross bike as a mountain bike, if you will. And then this whole gravel thing emerged. And next thing I know, I don't want to say I don't care about cyclocross, but it never really entered my mind lately. It's just gravel, gravel, gravel. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, Frank touched on it, you know, it's the community, it's a big part of it. And I think as you get, you know, some of us get into the riding and the climbing, you know, some of us really gravitate towards climbing, and some of the hardest, challenging climbs are on the gravel bike. And, that becomes something you kind of focus on, that dirty summit, the local thing that we do. It's just brutal. And you can't stand up. You just got to sit and grind, power it out. And so there's some technical element to it, I think, that gets everybody. But so I've looked at that trail, the Oregon Trail Gravel Grinder ride for, you know, last couple of years and think, man, I got to go do that. It just seems so cool. What, I've got so many questions. I don't even know where to begin. So,
Frank, why don't you tell them how we got there? Because it's kind of a longer story that really you kicked off.
Actually, one of our other local riding buddies who Dave knows very well, a guy by the name of James Thurlow. This was actually like a bucket list ride for him. His parents live up in Bend, and I'd done a race with him up in Bend previously, a gravel race. And he was turning 50. This was, I think, 3 years ago. And so he called me. He said, hey, there's this gravel grinder stage race, total bucket list. Would you do it? I don't want to go by myself. And I said, yeah, absolutely. So we signed up together. Unfortunately, he ended up having an injury that year, and then COVID hit. And then he still has an ongoing and lingering injury. So we pushed this thing off for 3 years. And the promoter was great. He said, hey, totally get it and everything. But finally said, look, you either got to show up or try and sell these passes, basically. And so that's when I coaxed David into doing it with me. But I'd been up there and ridden in the Ochoco, I think that's how you pronounce it, one day race. And so I kind of had felt the vibe up there and with this particular race promoter, and just thought, man, this thing is outstanding. So I was super excited when David said, hey, I'd be willing to jump in with you and go try this thing out, because definitely nerve wracking. And I think, you know, you touched on it, going by yourself on something like this. I think, you know, there's a lot to plan, and it's great. I mean, I think that's really what made the experience for me, was having David there, a good buddy, that we basically did the whole ride together. I mean, we would stick together and then, you know, get spread apart, but always knowing that, hey, you had somebody there if something happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
do you have to pack your own stuff? I saw that they offer a tote service.
Yeah. So they move your gear. So you're unencumbered when you're riding, right? You're just carrying whatever you're carrying, and they have some rest stops, of course, along the way. I mean, and it was great. I was honored to be invited by Frank. It was super fun. But I also, you know, people who are listening to this, I would encourage you to go alone too, if you don't have a tight riding buddy or someone that's up for that kind of distance, because the vibe is great. You'll meet people. We made some good buddies up there, you know, and people are friendly, and, you know, there's support and things like that. So you can do it on your own. You know, I wouldn't hesitate as well.
So how, Frank, first of all, just so that the James is sorely missed. I know he's still hurt, right? And he was such a fixture in the gravel scene. So James, if you're listening, get better, please. God, we miss you. But how far in advance of this thing did you ask David, so he gets some sense of how long you guys had been?
I think it was David, if you remember, Kirk, I think it was last year after the BWR, you know, I was telling him about it and saying, okay, hey, I don't think James is going to make it back. He's, you know, hopeful, but and right away he said, hey, if he's not in, I'd be interested in jumping in. So I'd say probably about a year. Is that right, David?
Probably something like that. Yeah. I didn't train, even though I had a year notice. I didn't train enough. That thing is hard.
So, if that's your question, Dave.
Yeah. So, Mike, I know you're loaded with questions, but again, just as a setup. All right. So we said 8 days. How many miles?
Five days.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. 5 days. How many miles in total? So
330 miles with like 33,000 feet of climbing, something like that.
Nice. Yeah, right? I'm looking at the Pioneer race at 362 miles, 33,560 feet is what they're claiming on the website here. Yeah, although that might be for next year's 2024.
Right, and we didn't do the Pioneer. We did the Settlers.
Settler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shorter, and it's not the pros are in the Pioneer, right?
Right.
And
yep.
So we opted for the B group, but it's still hard, and you know.
Yeah, it says 312 miles and 24,867 is what it's saying for feet. Yeah, but
you earned a beer after that one for sure.
The thing then, go ahead.
But we did an extra leg. There was an uphill time trial and a downhill time trial, I think in the third day of the Wednesday or the Friday, whatever it was, because it was kind of a staggered start. So we did a little bit extra, you know, just in Frank fashion, just to make it a little bit harder. We did an uphill time trial and then a downhill time trial.
I love it. Yeah. Always go for that extra credit when that's available.
Can you specifically train for something like that? Or is you guys just rode as much as you can? I mean, it's not like, you guys have lives, you got jobs. It's not like you could go out and do 4 consecutive days back to back, right? Or is any specific training or just ride as much as you can?
I think, you know, we definitely focused on the climbing and climbing on the dirt and kind of the technical riding. And so, you know, Mike mentioned the Dirty Summit. We were on Diablo quite a bit. Up and down there. And then, you know, mixing in the hop and some of these other things to get high intensity in there and some distance. But just really focusing on a lot of climbing the Ranger grade. I mean, every time we were on something that was comparable, right? We were like, okay, this is just Ranger grade. Just keep grinding away here.
Exactly.
Yeah, so there were several. Yeah. several long, long dirt climbs. That was the thing about this. Most of it was on dirt, and you know, a lot of sand and some technical riding too. And so, you know, even on the downhills, as you guys know, you know, especially in the dirt, you have to pay attention. So you're not relaxing during that time period. You know, you're making sure that you're following the right line, you know, avoiding crashing and things of that nature. And so Diablo was a huge training ground for us and definitely paid off.
Yeah. I always have like this little extra confidence when I go do an event, because Diablo is such, it's so hard and so steep and loose. And so you have to really dial in your form. And I haven't really encountered any type of race scenario where I felt like it was harder than the Diablo stuff, you know, in terms of technique. Sometimes you can get some steeper pitches, but the technique involved just to get that, do that dirty summit, it really gives you that confidence when you travel.
So we'll get into it, but the first day there was 8 miles of sand, and by sand, by sand, it was more like ash. I would call it like ash. It was so loose.
Oh, and wow.
That was something I had never ridden in. So that was a big challenge and new, right?
An eight mile stretch, or like just broke it. So
yeah,
you're plowing through. Basically, you're on a beach for 8 miles.
Yeah, but it was even loose. It was finer than beach sand. I mean, it was like ash. I don't know if you guys
have weird. Yeah, was it? Were you climbing in the ash, or climbing, was that more on a flat stretch?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All of the above. It was tough.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something really different. For sure.
Is the wheel just spinning out, or was it just hard to keep a straight line?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, man. That's the thing I love about gravel, right? I mean, that, probably everyone on some level, I was hooked as soon as I stood up. Like, you know, it gets tough and you try to stand up and then your wheel spins and it's like, okay, this is I got to figure this out, that I can't just do the default stand up and power through it. Like you can on a road bike and even on a mountain bike. Most of the time on a mountain bike, you just stand up and you got the traction to go ahead and just rally up the steep loose stuff. But yeah, when you encounter those situations, while it can be frustrating in the moment, it's also, I think, a big part of the allure is like trying to, it's like, man, I spend so much time on this damn bicycle. I got to figure out this thing's not going to defeat me, you know,
exactly.
Makes you hunker down that much more, you know.
It was super. That wasn't the only day with sand. So, you know, by the end, I don't know if we were definitely better at it, not good, but, you know, and you can see the pros, because we saw the pros fly by us and they were riding it like it was on the road, right? They knew how to ride that kind of stuff. So it's definitely more technique involved and, you know, skills that you can only acquire by doing it, I think.
Yeah.
It was super fun.
On the website, it talks about massages. And that is something I get every 3 weeks, I'm getting a massage. So the fact that they have massage now, but I want to know, like, was it legit, or was, like, somebody come by, rub your legs for 5 minutes and then they're on to the next? How did the massage thing work, or did it even happen?
No, it did. Yeah. They had, I mean, this is like a whole full camp setup, and I'd encourage anybody, you know, interested, go onto the website and they have some great pictures there, but there's about 300 people, or 300 riders on this thing. They set up tents for you. They transport all your gear in these big tubs, and each night they break everything down. All the food, everything's provided, and they have like a big, almost like a fair area where they've got a massage tent set up. They have the leg sleeves that you can sit in. They've got a whiskey bar, everything on that. David and I didn't do the massage tent.
It was
full every night, and there are legitimate massage therapists in there providing massage. That was the one extra thing that you had to pay for if you wanted to do it. And you had to, you know, book those appointments probably prior to the day, you know, a lot of people were on the Queen stage were getting that done, but we went into the booth, with the, what were those things called?
Normatec.
The leg inflator.
Yeah. Thing. Normatec. Yeah. Normatec boots. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'd sit in those every single day and in one of the reclining chairs, and we're sitting right next to the pros having these things on, and the fat tire booth was right next to it there with the beer. And it was just a great time. Everybody's sitting around talking about that day's ride, totally relaxed and waiting for dinner. And but yeah, the massage tent was real. There were absolutely people that were in it every single night on legitimate massage tables. And I mean, anything you can think of that you needed, they had there.
Right now, Mike doesn't have your undivided attention because he heard about massages. He's actually signing up for next year's ride.
I'm thinking I would be signing up for the massages at registration. You know, the registration opens tomorrow, by the way, for next year's event. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd be looking for that. Definitely.
So walk me through the typical day, right? So what time do you get up in the morning? What time you start riding? What time, like, how long are you out? I know it varied day to day, but then you're back. It seems like you had enough time to get back and chill and party and stuff. So walk us through the day.
Yeah, if you've done the AIDS ride, Dave, I think,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah.
Kind of similar to that. We had the VIP set up, right? So they would actually put up your tents for you. Other people actually brought their own tents, but these were provided and they set them up. I think they set them up for us, and you just kind of grab a random tent that differed from the AIDS ride. But I don't know, maybe up at like sunrise, 6 a.m. ish. I think breakfast was ready at 7, and we hit the trail at 8 ish, something like that.
Okay.
Was it a formal start every day, or was it just when you started rolling and they started taking your time at that point?
No, it was a formal start every morning, but it was usually like a rollout, right? You would roll out to wherever the actual start was. So you would roll out as a group, which was totally cool because everybody's talking, enjoying the morning. Of course, beautiful scenery. So we would roll out sometimes up to 10 miles, and then we would get to the start point. And then you had the timing chips on your bike. And so no matter if you were in the settler group or the pioneer, you were timed the entire time. For David and I, and then they had the electronic times at the fair area every night. And so we would go see. And then, you know, that kind of spurred John, like, okay, you know, even though we're doing the settlers, we're being timed. We know who we're racing against each day. Okay. And we would look at their numbers, figure out who they were. And then obviously we're looking for them on the course. And so each day, and then David and I would, have our own little sprint race at each one of these things. But yeah, you get up in the morning, they would have breakfast ready for you. You would have an official rollout. And then you would pack your stuff up if you were leaving that location that night. So that was part of it too. You put all your stuff back in your tub, put your tub to the area there. But the breakfast and the food and the coffee bar that they had in the morning, outstanding. They had a guy who had a Volkswagen bus that he served coffee out of every morning, and it was just top-notch coffee. So great way to start the morning, everybody getting their stuff ready, and you could just kind of feel the excitement. And then of course it varied, but we were out riding for about 6 hours every day. You roll back into the new location. That was the other kind of cool thing. At the end, the race would finish, the timing portion, and then you would have about another 10 miles to just cruise and enjoy the scenery until you got to that night's camp spot. And then you would get there and grab your tub, set your stuff up. And of course they had a late lunch there, and then dinner and beer and all that kind of stuff, anything you wanted basically.
Right. And there were showers, they had portable showers where you get yourself cleaned up so you weren't, stinky all the time. But the rollout was actually kind of key, as Frank said. It's kind of like you see in the tour, right, where all the riders are kind of chatting with each other behind the car, and it sets up the vibe, accordingly, that it is a race, but also it's like a community building, because you get to talk to people like, how are you feeling this morning? Oh, my legs are sore or whatever. And then the rollout at the end, after the sprint, you get to cruise back. And so you can laugh about the, you know, you're not just not right into camp and cleaning up. You can talk about the race, or that was fun, or let's wait for somebody and drag them back to the camp, you know? So it was a really cool vibe. It was awesome. It was.
Yeah. I can't, you know, but I think people are going to listen to this and go, God, you guys are sound like a broken record, but that is it. You just say, you must've used that word a million times, but that is the appeal for me of gravel, is the vibe. And I know, David, you said you, even if you're by yourself, do it. But I tell you, the gravel grinder that I enjoyed the least was the Lost and Found. And that's, I signed up by myself and I did it by myself, and I just didn't enjoy it as much as the times that we've done Fish Rock or some of these ones that we've all done together. So I don't know. I think I'm all about the vibe. I'm all about the camaraderie and riding with friends. So, yeah.
Absolutely. It was awesome to hang out with Frank for a week, but I just don't, if you were into the gravel ride, I think you can make friends easy too and find someone at your level. So
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Were the stages pretty even, like in terms of mileage and elevation, or was there like a queen stage, so to speak, where it was like this?
They were all hard. Yes. They were all hard. That's my input, but they were all a little bit different. Right. But Frank, you probably remember a little bit better the distance.
Yeah. Climbing, yeah. So the first 2 days were, I think they were both about, 60 to 70 miles, you know, with some decent climbing obviously in it. And then Wednesday was the so-called recovery day, which we decided to do the full time trial, which was a total blast. And I'll talk about that in a second, but the queen stage was Thursday or the fourth day. It wasn't Thursday. Sure. I think it was Saturday, actually the day of the week, but that one was about 80 miles with, I don't remember the exact climbing, but I mean, it was tough. We climbed for long, long ways, way up in elevation as well. We were up in through snow in some areas.
More like 90 miles by the time we were done, including the roll out and the roll back. It was probably closer to 90 on that. And the next day, the last day was like 80 as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But days four and five, those were super, super hard days. But again, when you got done, you have a sense of accomplishment for sure. Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done some 24 hour races, you know, and the base camp, you can, this similar kind of vibe, you know, you get people around you, other camps, and everybody's kind of sharing their stories, commiserating and, celebrating, you know, so it's kind of what I envision it will be like when I finally do it one day, hopefully maybe this next year. Are you guys going back? Are you planning on doing it this year as well? Or is it like, I know it's not inexpensive, right? Mm-hmm. You got to take some time off work. You have an entry fee. That's what is it? $1,200. Mm-hmm. So, but it sounds like, when on the surface, you look like, wow, I'm going to pay $1,200 to go race my bike. That seems kind of wild. But when you factor in the tents and the massage and the food and everything that they're providing, obviously it's like the most ideal situation to go and do something like that is what they're trying to provide for people, is what it feels like, you know,
listening. For a 5-day vacation, it's actually quite inexpensive, right? If you think about it's hard work.
Lodging included. Food and lodging included.
Exactly. We're not by the pool sipping margaritas, that's for sure. But I mean, it was, I would do it again. I think Frank, mm-hmm. You know, wants to look at some other options, you know, other big rides. But I thought it was awesome. We lucked out with the weather. I hate the heat, and it was perfect weather. It was like in the 70s. Maybe we had one day and up into the 80s, but the previous year was in the hundreds and they suffered, and that would have been miserable for me. So, you know, when you
roll the dice,
it's, mm-hmm. You know, we got lucky, but you could be unlucky and have really tough weather.
All right. Let's talk about the totes. Cause I want to know, like, what did you bring for the tote? And did you nail it, or was there like, oh man, what was I thinking? How did I not bring this? So just for anybody that's maybe going to do it for the first time, if you could kind of give them like a contents list for the totes.
Yeah. So here's the thing. So those totes, they're the totes that you can get at Costco, the big black totes with the yellow top. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You can have up to 50 pounds worth of gear and stuff in there.
And so they're like 30 gallons, by the way. They're huge. It's like a 30 gallon garbage tub. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You can put like several weeks of stuff in there, in my opinion. I had plenty of room. So,
okay.
So yeah. We were probably the good mix, because I would say, David, if you want to comment, but I think he underpacked a little and I think I overpacked.
Okay.
So I had a recharging battery, one of the large ones that probably weighed in and of itself about 5 pounds itself that I threw in there. But you got all your typical stuff, your sleeping bag, your pillow, five kits. You want a new kit for each day. I think that was helpful.
Yeah.
You know, a change of clothes that you're going to wear at night, that type of stuff. Just the typical kind of stuff. They actually have a checklist on their website of things to bring that are very helpful. And we had another person who had done the race, who was giving us information about, hey, think about this, that type of stuff. So mine was probably a little bit overpacked, but I was well under the 50. I think it was around the 45 pound. And then David, what do you think yours even weighed?
I don't know. 30 pounds maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't think I was underpacked. I was never going, oh man, I wish I had this.
No, because I was giving you stuff that I had.
Oh, he's that guy.
The truth comes out.
That is not true. What did you have for that?
I don't have a light. I don't have that light. Here you go.
But you have a flashlight on your phone, so it's not a big deal.
So are you
a little chair? Camp chair for me. Okay, that was one thing. So
camp chair. Okay, yeah. That's a good tip.
Okay, yeah.
And were you bringing fresh clothes for every night, or is it kind of like, you know what, I'm just going to have like maybe two t-shirts and a pair of shorts and a pair of pants just in case it's cold? Or did you bring a sweatshirt and a jacket? I mean, how deep do you go with it? I mean, in Oregon, I would think, man, I better bring a jacket. It probably gets cold at night.
I brought a down jacket. I brought a sweatshirt. I had shorts. But I probably brought in a, you know, the last day we were going to drive back. So I had a clean set of clothes in the car that we left in the car because we're driving back from Bend. But yeah, like three t-shirts, a couple pairs of shorts, a couple pairs of jeans, a sweatshirt, a jacket, you know, beanie, ball caps, that kind of stuff. It's like camping, right? So you're not, you know, and you're not wearing it too much because you're hanging out half the evening and then you're going to bed. So
how about nutrition wise? Did you bring a bunch of nutrition with you, or was that kind of provided on site? How'd that work?
They provided at the rest stops, they had food. I was a little bit disappointed in the food options that they did have. They had plenty of like goo gels, but they didn't have any like Cliff bars or anything like that. It's like grab and stick in your pocket on the road, but they did have like peanut butter on pretzels and bananas, things like that at the rest stops. That was mixed. Next time I'd bring my own nutrition for the riding part. But the food at breakfast, like Frank was saying, and the dinners were great. And I'm vegetarian, and they had vegetarian options, which were pretty solid. Mm-hmm. So overall,
Could you get up? Sorry to interrupt. Could you get up and have breakfast early enough to like do your business after breakfast and get on a bike? Because that would be terrible. Like if you eat and it's like, okay, we're getting on the bike. And then, you know, an hour later, you got to pull a Demoulin or somewhere, you know?
They had stuff ready for you at like 6 a.m.
Okay.
So you could get up early and, you know, they had a wide variety of stuff and you had time to take after that, for sure.
You had time to get down to race weight is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
You know, right. Some people you'd see loading up their plates with like all this food, and I couldn't do that. Like I would just have a little bit of oatmeal with like a banana or some peanut butter inside of it or something like that. So I was going simple for breakfast. But some people were like loading up their plates with eggs and potatoes and all that stuff, but not for me.
Yeah, we had the guy from Hammer Nutrition on. He really kind of straightened us out on pre-ride. eating. He was saying you should have about 3 hours to, if you're going to eat, give yourself 3 hours to work through all the digestive stuff that's going to happen before you hop on the bike. And I'm one that I ride early a lot, and I get up, I don't eat anything. I just get on the bike and go. And but in a situation like that, where it's a, you know, it's kind of a battle of attrition, really, right? You're having these big, hard days back to back to back. And I might want to switch that up a little bit. I'm sure that breakfast tastes pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know, I'm a Hammer guy too. I love their products, and I listened to your guys' podcast actually on that one, so that was great info. But so I brought Hammer products because I knew that wasn't, they had goo, you know, which is fine, people have it, but I like the Hammer stuff. So I brought Hammer Heed. I brought some protein drinks for after each day. Yep. Yeah. So if you have something that you like, I would suggest, yeah, bring that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a little dodgy switching it up and just kind of randomly taking, like, if you don't eat a banana while you're riding and then you're at a race, you stuff a banana, it could go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even not picking on a banana. I mean, banana's a good food, but.
It's funny. We're kind of glossed right over it. But that's one of the most stressful things I'm going to say this in my life is any ride that I do. I don't care if it's a Saturday ride. I don't care if it's a Sunday Splunk ride. I'm up 3 hours in advance because I just got to get through my system. I got to, like, if I haven't gone to the bathroom before I go out on that ride, like, I'm stressed. I'm totally stressed. Like, I'm going to hit mile 60 and my stomach going to start grinding. So, that's for me. If I'm in the camp and we're rolling out at 8, I'm going to be the guy fussing, rolling around at 5:30, getting moving. And
I'll be sleeping till about 30 minutes before takeoff. I need my sleep, man.
But, you know, we had to make a couple emergency stops, by the way. I mean, you're out.
Okay. Yeah. For
that queen stage, that was like a, I don't know, 9 hour day, right? So you're going through multiple cycles of digestion, let's say. And so
yeah. It's interesting, like David, maybe you could speak to this a little bit, but like, you know, growing up as a BMX kid and racing BMX or riding BMX, we'd be out for, it wasn't uncommon to be gone all day on a Saturday, you know, but you didn't think of it like it wasn't all hammering. We weren't pedaling the entire time, you know. But when I first started getting into cycling, the thought of being on the bike for like to be on a road bike for more than 2 hours, are you crazy? And then as you get old, for me, I don't know for you guys, but as I got older, it just seemed like I just gravitate more towards the longer, harder stuff is what that 9 hour day sounds like. Oh man, that was probably amazing. Right. Those are like etched in your brain for eternity, you know?
It rained on us. Some people got hailed on, like multiple inches of hail. I mean, it was a crazy day that day. I enjoy the long rides, and when you're done, there's nothing better, right? It's like a sense of accomplishment, and you're physically and mentally exhausted because it's tough riding, right? And it's not just the legs. Like I was saying earlier, my shoulders were killing me. You're going down some pretty intense trails. The crazy weather that we had that day.
How about you, Frank? Do you like the longer, tougher stuff, or do you, I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Yeah. Just from, the triathlon days, I do like the longer stuff, but it's funny because we've kind of got to that point now, David and I, we did Belgian Waffle in San Diego.
Yeah.
Back-to-back years. And in the second year, we're like, oh my God, it was so hot out there. And we're like, this is awful. We should have done the wafer, we'd feel good. And so that's what we did. We went out and did the wafer, which was, I think, 70 miles. So it's still a good hard workout, but we finished, we weren't wrecked,
Right.
So, oh my gosh, that's cool. That's probably the sweet spot, 70 to 90. Once you start getting over, the 110, 120, 130 miles and all the extra climbing, it just hurts,
Yeah.
So these days, you know, the gravel grinder, even the queen stage, even though we were tired, you know, I don't think, you know, by the end of the week, obviously we were hurting, but I wouldn't say we were wrecked, you know, like after a Belgian waffle, you know, that's just an intense effort. So, yeah, I do like the longer, but I also like to, you know, be able to finish and enjoy a beer and, you know, camaraderie with people, not roll in thinking, man, I just need to lay down.
Right. Yeah.
And nap time.
Yeah. Like 130 miles. That's a little bit too long. And the heat that we had both times when we did those was.
I've told that story when I finished that because we were down there together on that Belgian pool. And I pulled in and I'm sitting there and Sue was there and some friends, and they came over, they brought me this big, the waffle and the fries, and I'm staring at a beer truck and I'm like, let's get out of here. Like I did. I mean, here's this celebration going on and I was so wrecked. I'm like, no. And Sue goes, you're not going to drink beer. I go, oh, I'm drinking beer. We're just going back to the house and we're drinking it there. But talk about not being wrecked. So there's two things I want to know. Dave, you mentioned the downhill and whatnot. So I want to know about the setup that you guys had on your bikes, right? But also I'm thinking, okay, you say you're not wrecked, but like, I'm good. Like I rode 70 miles this weekend. And then yesterday I got out and did 50 and I felt really good. And if I was out on the bike today, that's when I'd start to feel it. Right. So, I mean, that's 5 days. I don't know. How do you recover from, like, I'm at my age now, 3 is about where I'm like, okay, I need a rest if I'm going to be any good the next. So how do you recover?
Let me talk about the bike real quick because I mentioned that I'm on a Giant Revolt. I rode with 38 millimeter tires, which were too small. They recommend, I think, minimum of 40 or 42s. I would go, because I also mentioned the sand, right? The 8 miles of sand, bigger the better. I would max out whatever your bike can take for those who are going to do this in the future, 45s. We were also talking about the suspension gravel bikes, right? So after 5 days, I mean, I was pretty wrecked at the last day, the final day, which was like 80 miles, and you had this endless climb with sand on the climb. I was completely wrecked when we got to the top. Bigger tires, suspension, a flexible seat post if you don't have suspension. And then, you know, as far as like the accumulation of the miles, I think certainly starting out on the second and third days, your legs are sore, but you get into a rhythm and things loosen up. And clearly you don't have like the punch on day 5 as you did on day 1, right? You're not sprinting like you did on the first day. So it does obviously accumulate and can be rough, but I don't know. You just kind of get through it and you eat your way through it and try and get as much sleep as you can. You know, you're camping, right? So it's not a feather cushion bed, but you sleep pretty well after those long days.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Frank? What was your setup like?
I've got an Obed Boundary and I also had 38s on there too. We had different tires. I had IRCs. I can't remember what David had on his, but they were different. I would have gone bigger tires too. Yeah. So my shoulders were sore too. I do have a flexible seat post. So I'd probably go 42s right in there and I think I'd be fine on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would go with a suspension on the front or anything, just because there's so much climbing that I just feel good on my bike. So I'd probably stick with that with a little bit bigger tire set. They do allow you to bring an extra wheel set and they'll transport it for you. And so if you swap them out based on the leg. And there were several people that did. And I thought about it. My buddy James said, hey, bring mine. I didn't want to bring his and then have to worry about, all right, if I don't use them, I don't want them getting ruined in the truck, their carbon rims, or I just didn't want to fool with it. I'm going to go with what I got and you know, hope for the best. So, yeah, you know, you take a look, and of course, that's always the big talk, right? At these gravel races, what size tire and what are you running? And that's all part of it, you know, trying to figure that out. So, I agree with David, bigger tires are better for sure. My shoulders were super sore. It was funny because I think it was the second morning or third morning, I'm thinking, man, what did I do yesterday? You know, and, but he's right. By that fourth and the fifth day, you're so tired, you sleep perfectly in those stints. It's no big deal. And, yeah, the fifth day I was tired, but I felt good knowing that, hey, we just got this thing ahead of us and then we've got this under our belt. So,
yeah,
you know, it's definitely a mind thing as well. Trying to keep that in mind that, hey, I'm out here having fun. I get to do this and you know, just work through it. And
yeah, I paid to do this.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of the core of it for me is, hey, this is, you know, this is fun. Can you do it? Can you get your body through it? And, you know, and hopefully in one piece. I had two slow speed crashes on that first day during that 8 mile stretch. And outside of that, you know, I was fortunate because there was some technical stuff where we were just ripping down, and a couple times the motorbikes were passing by us, you know, with the pros, and there was dust everywhere and you really couldn't see exactly where your line was. And so you're just hoping like, oh man, I hope I'm hitting the right line here. And there were a few crashes. There was a gal on the first day that had crashed that I don't think she came back. She got pretty hammered. So, I mean, it's like, you got to be careful out there.
She had broken teeth, I think, and major road wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, careful, right? There were some fast descents. And, you know, unlike the waffle ride, which is like half road, half gravel, this is almost, I would say, 90% dirt. Yeah. So there's like almost no penalty for bigger tires except for the weight while climbing. So, yeah, I would definitely go bigger for this particular trail.
Well, Frank, you touched on something, the no suspension fork, and Dave and I, on a previous podcast, we talked about suspension fork. I recently did put I bought the new Revolt X, and it has a suspension fork from Giant Bicycles.
You know a guy, right?
Yeah. One of my favorite all-time bikes was my original Revolt. It was this beautiful green color, rigid fork, very light, 18 pounds. And I just love that bike. And then when I got the new bike, I didn't really like the setup of it. It comes with 50 tires, a dropper seat post. It was kind of like too much in my estimation. So I modified it. I took the dropper off, put the defuse, the flex post back on, and lighter wheels, 40 tires. And I kind of built a hybrid of the two. I rode it twice and I sold my green bike. Yeah. And I'm someone who takes a lot. I love climbing. Climbing's like, I love climbing. And it's important to me to be competitive on the climbs. So, what you're just describing, at the, you know, Oregon, you know, it's accumulation, right? Whether it be a 1 day, 125 mile dirt episode or a 5 day, you know, it's important to be able to climb, but man, you gotta be, just feel fresher. And then the other thing that I, you know, obviously, right, suspension's going to help you on the descents, and it's only 40 millimeters. I had no idea how much better descending would be. It is night and day. And my bike's only a pound heavier. So it is a pound, but I don't know. For me, I feel like it's a penalty worth taking. And obviously it's not for everybody. It's an expensive endeavor to put to put one on your existing bike. A lot of times can be challenging because of all the different variations of head tube configurations and whatnot. And then, you know, to buy a whole new bike, obviously very expensive. So, I would encourage, if you ever get an opportunity somewhere to ride one, you know, your size, so you can really, you know, put it through the paces, I would encourage you to give it a go. And to Dave's point earlier, 70 miles one day, 50 miles the next, these are road rides, Dave. We're talking about dirt.
I know.
It's completely different.
Look, I'm, you know, traditionally a late adopter. I was late to take up I knew a guy that owned a bike shop and I didn't want to give up my bike to get disc brakes. Right now I'm glad I did. But the suspension thing, I don't know that it's going to change. I've come around to the point where I'm not against it, but for me personally, like, I'm never going to, I've told you this before, I'm going to write a book and it's going to be called Why Dave Will Never Win a Gravel Race. It's going to be a very short book because the page is going to be because you can't descend, right? And I don't know that that would change it. I don't know if I had suspension because I'm slow on my trance with 130 mil travel, right? I'm just a slow descender. And I don't know that that would change my riding. So I don't know where I'd reap the benefits, I guess. I don't know. Maybe not until I can demo it, but I'm never going to win. This is just the way it is.
Well, I'm a gravel junkie, for lack of a better word. And, when we go to these sales meetings and you're all excited, they're going to launch these new bikes. You have no idea what's coming because they really try to keep it secret. And they were hyping up this new gravel thing. And I was so geeked up, and then they roll the bike in. And I was just like, honestly, that was my reaction, with the suspension fork and these mountain bike tire 50s are like, XC tires and then this dropper seat post. And I was just like, it didn't speak to me at all. And as a sales rep, obviously I sell a lot of these bikes. I thought, I better sample one of these things just so I can really, change my perspective so I can understand the bike a little bit more, And I never thought that I would end up converting, going off my beloved Rigid Revolt, but yeah, it's something else. And so anyway, if you get a chance, give it a shot.
What's on the horizon? I know you said you might go back to this, but you had some other ideas. What's the next big adventure, and are you going to include me?
Yeah, so part of it, and David talked about the people that we met there. I mean, just great people. And there was a couple guys that we hung out with. One guy lived in Pennsylvania. I think the other guy lived in Utah. And so we're talking about Rebecca's.
Abbott, Idaho?
Yeah. So, hey, you got to go to that one. You got to try it. Actually, I think Rebecca trains the one guy that we were hanging out with. So they spoke highly of it. And so, that's what we were thinking. Hey, this was awesome. I would definitely do it again. And I can't say enough about the promoter, Chad, and how the logistics, they did just an outstanding job. They would send the motorbikes out each morning to just make sure the course was clear. The signage was perfect. You never felt like you were lost. And we're out in the middle of nowhere. In fact, one morning, I don't know who, but somebody came by and pulled up some of the signs, the directional signs, and moved them. Well, these guys went out a second time each morning to make sure everything was good, the motorbikes, and they found that they had done this. So they reset them, and then they, of course, stayed out there. So you talk about a well-run event, that's this one for sure. Yeah. So that's what we're, talking to these guys about the different events that are out there and just experiencing different events. And that would probably be one of them.
Yeah, I think that's it too. I mean, what I'd want to make sure is I don't fall into the trap that I did with the road racing. It's like, you always go do Snelling, you always go do Cantua, you go do, right? That's why I want to move on to the next thing. And I certainly want to go back and do Belgian, but I wanted to do Lost and Found, and I want to do these other things. I want to, the Bovines coming up in October, I want to go do that so they don't fall into that trap, because there's no shortage of great rides, but there, I have limited resources and time to get there. So I just want to dose my efforts, right? So.
Well, Frank, I have to say, I haven't done Rebecca's Private Idaho, but I've talked to a lot of people that have, and similar, everybody's like, yeah, if you're into gravel, you got to go do this thing. It's incredible. And similar kind of stories of what you're describing with Chad up in Oregon, where everybody surrounding the event, everything's just first class. There's no miscues on any level, and everybody's well taken care of. And that's something, Rebecca is a sponsored athlete of Liv, which is part of the Giant family. And she was at Sea Otter this year, and she was letting me have it pretty good about not, I had never been, you know, and so maybe this year, I don't know if you're planning on doing it for 2024. Yeah, I'm going to try to make that one a real, that's going to get up my calendar for this.
When is that?
Yeah. Good question.
We should do it as a group.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't we pencil that in? I'll send out some kind of communication. I'll talk to Rebecca too and see if, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe there's a group deal. You know, yeah. We won't hold our breath on that, but yeah, I hear it is pretty hard to get there. So, that would be something to kind of figure out logistics.
I think it's pretty isolated. Yeah.
It's, you can fly right in, but I understand flying right in is very expensive. Whereas you can fly into, I don't know, nearby and rent a car and drive, which could also be expensive, but if we split it, be reasonable, you know? Yeah.
Dave's car, Dave can carry 4 bikes.
That's right. Hey, just actually, I want to, a shout out to Chad himself, right? Obviously it was well organized, but I had a situation where I had a backup bike that I needed to bring. And we didn't know exactly where I was going to store it, which bike, you know, depending which bike I was using. And he offered to have it stored at his garage in his personal house, you know, just because he was worried about it getting thrashed, like we put it in the truck or something like that. So, I mean, just a super nice guy himself and super accommodating. And
yeah.
And the whole event kind of had that tone, right? Everybody was kind of taking care of each other and looking out for each other and really friendly and not super competitive, but still competitive. So yeah, Chad was awesome.
Yeah, no, and I think they all deserve it, to be honest. I mean, I don't even know who the organizer of the Lost and Found is. And everyone asks me, like, what did you think? And I said, I hated the ride and I'll never do it again. But the event itself was phenomenal, right? The venue, as you said, the way the course was marked, the way they took care of people, the after party, the pancake breakfast beforehand. I mean, ample porta potties, right? You know, it's just one of those things that that creates it. But all these guys that are behind these gravel things, they just got it dialed.
Yeah. I have some experience putting on events. I hosted a mountain bike charity event for years. And it becomes a year round thing, you know, in order to get all the sponsors lined up, all the event logistics, you're working on that thing for a solid 12 months. And then when you finally, the day of or the week of, and you know, it's so satisfying. If everything's done right and you're prepared, it's really satisfying, but there's always this last minute, you know, I got to do this. Let me get that. And so the promoter rarely gets their just due. I feel like anytime I do an event, I'm always trying to connect with the person that puts it on and really just shower them with gratitude and appreciation for everything that they're doing for the community of cycling. Yeah, it's something that gets overlooked a lot of times, but I'm glad you guys brought that up, because it really is like a top-down thing. Like this guy Chad is a certain type of person, and the event ends up taking on that personality, and that's super cool. That makes me want to do it even more, you know.
No, yeah. I 100%. I don't belabor it, because I think that these guys they're fantastic, and that, as you said, Mike, that trickles down. But where would we be without them? We've had Robert Liebold on from Velo Promo.
Yeah.
And you know, there's no succession plan there. So what happens when he retires, right? Where do we go racing? And, you know, we could criticize that this guy doesn't have enough porta potties or there's no prizes or whatever. But at the end of the day, where are we going to be without him? And where would we be without Chad? Right. So
yeah.
You know, shout out to all of them.
Yeah. What, so to the point though, it is a competition, right? At the end of the day, there's the vibe and the food and the massage and all the stuff, but, you know, you guys are competitive and it is a competitive situation. How'd you guys end up, how'd you end up faring out on the event?
Yeah, I think we did great in our age group category. Unfortunately for the settler group, they didn't have an overall final one, but each day you can go on and pull up where you were. The first day, I think we were like sixth and seventh. And then the rest of the time we were, I believe, in the top five.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and actually, in our group, I think 13 started, but only, I think 9 finished. So there was a little bit of attrition too.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense. I mean, it's a massive undertaking and, you know, a crash. I can't, like you mentioned that gal, the crash and broke her. I mean, it sounded like a very serious crash, but I can imagine even if you didn't even have that serious of a crash, and you know, you got like some aches and pains, and then to try to rally for the next 250 miles or whatever it is. Not a lot of people have that kind of fortitude. And yeah, well,
those are impressive numbers, guys. Congratulations.
Yeah, that's great effort.
But there's the real competition, I want to say, was between Frank and I. I mean, that's yes. where it really mattered.
All right.
And I got to give it to Frank. He always beat me in the sprint. I don't know if you guys saw the picture that I sent via email.
Yeah.
But at the timing chip, there was a sprint. I think it was the second. I don't remember. It was the first or second day. And Frank was kind of leading me out, and I came around for the sprint, but I was coming up fast, and it was unclear who won. And for the timing chip people, right, Frank beat me by less than or just over 1/100th of a second. So I had to get the photo finished. And it looks bigger than it was, but it, clearly I was coming up fast. But he beat me. And then there was the next day, I think, which was the Queen stage. Was that the Queen stage? We were hauling for like the last 20, 30 miles. We were just cruising, just him and I on these fire roads. And it was so, so fun. And I actually beat him by like 1 second because I started behind him. The way this day started, it wasn't the same start time. There were different start times. So we crossed the finish line. He crossed just in front of me. But since I started a second behind, I actually beat him that race. But Frank is the faster of the two of us. So hats off to Frank.
David cracked me up. He was at the timing chip booth every night and made good friends with them. And I couldn't believe when he came up with the pictures. And kudos to him to actually say, "All right, here I'm."
He's like slide number 20. You know, hey, can you tweak these a little bit?
I was like, "Are you sure he won? Are you sure?" And they're like, "Yeah, here's the photo."
That's awesome.
We have the same photo finish from the waffle ride the year prior. Where Frank also beat me by like a tire width. I gotta improve my sprint.
So it sounds like now you have to go back.
See, this is more races for sure.
This is exactly what I love about cycling, right? You two obviously push each other. You know, you feed off of each other, and you both win at the end of the day. You're both better for it, and that's so much about cycling. You know, it's tough, challenging, hard. And you get somebody, you know, maybe they're your nemesis, maybe they're your buddy, but there's always this motivation going on. And at the end of the day, everybody's winning because it just makes you work that much harder. And yeah, it's one of the beautiful things about the sport in my mind. Well, listen, guys, we should probably wrap it up. We could go on a lot longer, but I do have a responsibility for the company I work for. And it starts in a few minutes, but yeah, I want to thank you so much. I learned a lot. Definitely going to do this event in the future. And I'll reach out to you guys for RPI. Any final thoughts?
I'll just say, hey, anybody who's interested in doing this particular event and wants any, you know, further information, deeper information, well, feel free to reach out and you can share our information. I'm sure Dave would feel the same way. Happy to help out and help people plan because, I mean, there's a million questions. So appreciate you guys, what you guys do and getting this information out and just being a part of the community.
Do you guys have individual social media accounts? That'd be a good way for somebody to message you about it. Are you both on Instagram?
I'm not on social media except for Strava personally.
Okay. Good man.
Yeah. I try to avoid that stuff.
Holding out.
Email or text or phone or whatever. I'm happy to give whatever information people are looking for.
If they give it to us, Mike, I'll get it out to them.
Okay. Yeah. Dave will put it in a post Well, okay. Before we wrap,
thank you guys for having us on. This is super fun. I wish we can keep talking. Obviously we got lives and responsibilities, but this was super fun.
Does your son have any thoughts? Like, did he miss you at all while you were gone? Or
no, he doesn't miss me. He's a teenager.
The kid hates gravel.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get him on his bike more often.
All right. Before we wrap it up, we have a very special announcement to make. We have our very first subscriber to the podcast. I want to give a huge shout out to Ken Lunsford. He is our first subscriber, and we are so appreciative, Ken. We're going to create a Hall of Fame wall. And Ken, you are in the top position on that wall, and you will be forever on. So we appreciate it. If you're interested in joining Ken on the wall, we got the Cycle Jerk. You go to cyclejerkspodcast.buzzsprout.com and you can subscribe. We're going to continue doing this free because we love it. But we sure appreciate those of you that can, let's just say not those of you, Ken, for subscribing. Hopefully there'll be those of you in the future, but no pressure, don't feel obligated. But if you want to, give us a nod or a 5-star review on Apple or anything you can do to kind of say you like what we're doing here. And also we're open to critique. Also, if you want to see something different, you don't like the way Dave sounds. I mean, I understand.
You don't like Mike's background. But Mike and I, we didn't actually finalize this, so hopefully I'm not in trouble, but I think, I don't know how much it's going to amount to, but likely our plan, I think, is when these people subscribe, that money's just going to go to a charity. I mean, yes. We're very fortunate right now. This doesn't cost as much to do, so anything that gets subscription, we're not getting paid for this. We just do it for the love of cycling. So any money that comes in, we're going to be sending off to charity. So,
yeah, we don't have a charity selected yet. Dave and I just started discussing that, but we'll figure out where it's going to go. There's obviously so many worthy charities, but we'll get that ironed out and we'll let everybody know. So, all right. So that concludes episode 108. Frank, Dave, thank you so much.
Awesome.
Yeah. Congrats on a great event, and we'll look for you
before we go.
Yeah.
An hour and 15 minutes have passed. Pronounce his last name now.
Gergagina.
Oh, close.
Gergina.
Frank G.
Yeah. The G-man.
All right, fellas. Thanks so much. Awesome. That concludes the podcast. Yep.
Thanks, guys. Awesome stuff.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Are you sure you want to?